WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. Israel launches a preemptive strike overnight on the militant group Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israel claiming the attack was necessary because Hezbollah was planning a strike of its own first, and Hezbollah has reacted, firing hundreds of rockets into northern Israel with drones and missiles aimed at military targets. Dozens of Israeli jets, meanwhile, hitting targets in southern Lebanon. In the U.S., in the presidential race, it's heating up with just a couple of months until Election Day. Republicans are energized, too, after Robert F. Kennedy Jr. endorsed former President Trump on Friday.
I'm here to tell you that I will leverage your tremendous accomplishments to serve the ideals that we share, the ideals of peace, of prosperity, of freedom, of health, all the ideals that motivated my campaign.
Democrats are feeling good after their star-studded convention in Chicago this week, nominating Kamala Harris for president. This is ABC News. A statue of the late civil rights leader and Congressman John Lewis unveiled before a crowd in a city park in Georgia.
The crowd included neighbors, politicians, and civil rights leaders who applauded when a black veil was pulled down to reveal the 12-foot-tall statue of Lewis at Decatur's historic square.
It's going to be life-changing.
I'm 82 years old, so I have seen a lot, and this is it's really good for us.
DeKalb County Chief Executive Mike Thurman to WSB-TV.
Something that will be lasting, inspiring, and something that will bring us together.
Lewis died in 2020 from pancreatic cancer. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Italian authorities are launching a manslaughter investigation into the sinking of that super yacht off the Sicilian coast. Authorities say the ship's crew may be to blame for the tragedy. Seven people died. Their remains were recovered one by one by divers over the past week. Some of the victims include Americans. I'm Derek Dennis, ABC News.
At Fleet Farm, we know every opening day doesn't begin and end with us. But if it did, we've got you covered. Everyday hunting gear from Winchester, Remington, and Bear. Everyday fishing gear from Daiwa, St. Croix, and Rapala. Everyday yard cleanup from Scott's, Fiskars, and Agri-Fab. Whatever makes your day, we're right there with you. At Fleet Farm, we've got everything you need for everyday life.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WRCE website at WRCE.fm, your news just for the Richland Center area. I'm Joanne Krulatz with WRCE News.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Savannah Tome Olson. Libraries are pushing back against the proposals in Project 2025, the so-called wish list for the next Republican president. Mark Moran reports.
The latest report from the Every Library Institute says the Republican Party's agenda, as outlined in the document known as Project 2025, takes aim at places where students can read, discover, and explore. Conservatives call it a matter of accountability. In Iowa, there are at least 540 public libraries, fourth highest in the nation. More than 400 are among the scant cultural resources in towns with populations of less than 2,500. Peter Bromberg with the Institute says Project 2025, a massive effort to reclassify civil service workers as political appointees, would take direct aim at libraries and the people who work there.
You know, librarians and teachers are highly trusted and well-known and well-loved in their communities. It's really kind of a shocking and extreme attempt to twist our democratic society and our institutions into more of a totalitarian theocracy.
But backers of Project 2025 say librarians need to be held accountable for what's on their shelves. Bromberg says Project 2025 promotes book bans, restricts LGBTQ content, and undermines the intellectual freedom and inclusivity that libraries are known for. He believes that would ultimately threaten students' educational quality and could presage the end of libraries serving as open and inclusive spaces for people who want to learn. This is Mark Moran for Iowa News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A shower or storm, then partly sunny skies. Highs of the lower 90s. The heat index, though, approaching 100. Tonight, partly cloudy, lower 70s. Hotter for Monday, sunny skies and mid-90s. The heat index over 105. Currently 89 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, Todd Albaugh. Join us next time as we are back in Wisconsin after covering the DNC. We'll look back at the news of the weekend and get you ready for the last week in August. Badger football coming up.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel, Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review, and this is our weekend weekly venued broadcast. My name is Jim Santel. Delighted to have you with me this weekend for our weekend review of all things related to government, law, and the aspiration for justice in America and beyond as well. As always, we take our name, our adopted commission here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, from the notion of a friend, Amicus. Amicus Curiae is a friend of the court. Ami is the Latin. That's where we derive our name. It's an individual, an organization that assists somehow in understanding, appreciation, assessment of some relevant issues that are out there for decision, for debate, for analysis. And that indeed is our purpose here on this, our weekend broadcast, Amicus, a Law Review, encouraging you as well to be a part of our analysis, our review, our discussion by engaging with my wonderful producer Max and me, questions, inquiries about the subject matters that we're talking about this weekend here on the broadcast. As always, you can reach Max and me at 844-967-2789. Also send us an inquiry, a question on the Civic Media app, and we will get to that as well. Delighted not only to have your listening engagement in our discussion, but also your participation in it. And so do just that here on Amicus, a Law Review. What is our syllabus for this weekend's broadcast? As always, ambitious but achievable. As always, focused upon those issues related to law and government, and yes, indeed, the aspiration for justice. It is that time of year when we think about what we're doing in our summer vacations. It's a bit early for our grade school and even high school teachers to be asking students to report on what they have done during the course of their previous summers. But we're going to begin this weekend broadcast with some examination of what our Supreme Court justices have been doing in the months of July and August, and maybe even into September or so, before they return to the next term of their review of cases. That, of course, is the 2024-2025 term. We spend some time talking about how the Supreme Court justices, at least some of them, who've disclosed this information, where they are, what they're doing, some academic things, and some visits around the world. Then we're also going to talk about other things that are going on in the court, even in this so-called down period. In fact, the Supreme Court's been active on its so-called emergency application docket. That's the docket that recently Associate Justice Elena Kagan was critical of. Way too many applications, she says, fall into this category of emergency applications, when in fact they're really not. And so we're going to talk about what the Supreme Court has on its docket in this so-called emergency system here before the Supreme Court. And we'll talk about the kinds of things that the Supreme Court is going to be doing in these months, even while we're all in a summer vacation kind of mode. Beyond that, we're going to talk about other things related to the actions of the Supreme Court in that docket, including a major decision, really a non-decision by the Supreme Court, a decision not to overturn a rule, a regulation, some legislation coming out of, once again, the state of Arizona, having to do with voting restrictions and, in particular, the mandates attendant upon people who want to register for the first time in Arizona. We're going to talk about what is coming out of the state of Arizona and also make reference once again to the fact that Arizona was also the source, the hotbed, if you will, of that case a number of years ago called Brnovich, the second major blow in recent times to the Voting Rights Act. And we'll chat with the Supreme Court, even in its emergency docket, did just this past week in connection with a major registration restriction there in the state of Arizona. A couple of other things also coming out of courts across our land. The Arkansas Supreme Court refusing to permit on the referendum this coming November in that state, in the state of Arkansas, a specific question about abortion rights, a proposal to promote the notion of privacy rights when it comes to reproductive rights there in Arkansas. Supreme Court just this past week declining to permit that to appear on the ballot in November. We'll tell you all about that as well. And then we also have a federal district court judge in Kansas, in Wichita, a stunning decision. It's a district court, it's a trial court decision of just this past week, finding for the first time in our recent history, our nation's history, that the prohibition, longstanding, established by the Congress many years ago on the possession and use of machine guns in our land, in the United States of America, is not in fact constitutional. Striking down a proposal for the challenge, for the prosecution of an individual there in Kansas who is charged with possessing a machine gun, and finding that particular law under which that person was charged is unconstitutional. We'll talk all about that at a time when we're also thinking, of course, about elections. All of these issues, abortion rights, privacy rights, gun rights, registration, the access that we have to voting in particular, all of that very much in our national consciousness as we think through this present campaign. Then we've got some review of some recent guilty pleas and adjudications of guilt in various areas around the country. We've got a lawyer who was representing the Oath Keepers. Remember them? This group, including one in particular, found guilty of insurrectionist type offenses related to January 6th. A lawyer who was prosecuted and successfully prosecuted, found guilty of tampering with evidence in connection with that January 6th prosecution. We've got a clerk out in Colorado who is engaged in election interference there, an attempt to undermine the results of the Colorado result there. And we're going to talk about that case as well. And then, of course, we're going to talk about the plea entered by, yes, that's right, George Santos, just this past week as well. George Santos, for the recent years, has indeed been in our nation's attention, our nation's focus, for a great many things, always denying having engaged in any inappropriate behavior. Certainly no admission of any criminal conduct. Just this past week, George Santos, former congressman, former member of the United States House of Representatives, pleading guilty. And we'll talk about what he pled guilty to and the likelihood that he will spend some time in federal prison at some point down the road. No sentencing anytime soon, but a major result in that particular case. And then in our second hour, if not even before then, we're going to chat about some other major things that are going on in litigation out there. One of them is a major announcement by the Attorney General, the federal Attorney General. Of course, his name is Merrick Garland. He's announced just this past week a major piece of antitrust litigation involving rents and landlords and tenants. We'll talk about what that's all about and why it too is significant when it comes to understanding the present campaign for the presidency and other positions in our local and state and national governments. We're also going to talk about a challenge brought to a proposal, a plan put in place, just initiated recently by the Biden administration, to aid undocumented spouses of American citizens. We'll talk about that immigration plan and the challenge now brought to that in federal court by a number of states and individuals who maintain that it is unconstitutional. Obviously, no resolution of that decision yet, but we'll talk about the premises for that. And finally, going back to other news from just last week's broadcast, we're going to talk about what happened in Venezuela just this past week with its Supreme Court, a Supreme Court that, yes, indeed, affirmed over the international objections and the findings of an awful lot of people out there that their recent presidential election was, in fact, the result of fraud and the result of corruption there. The Supreme Court in Venezuela, nonetheless, finding that the results, the officially announced results by the Maduro campaign, the Maduro presidency, are in place. We'll talk about what that means and the significance of all of that in the international realm of rule of law. Let us begin then. Let us begin in this broad and spanning discussion of many things across our nation, across our globe, with talking about the United States Supreme Court. What are they doing? What are they doing after this major blockbuster and contentious term that spilled over into July, including the July 1, the major catastrophic decision on July 1, finding that a president of the United States of America cannot be prosecuted for crimes committed, certain crimes committed while in the presidency. A landmark blockbuster case, along with others, including this other case involving the change in which federal judges give deference to the agency decisions, executive expertise, understanding in the agencies, no more as a result of what the Supreme Court, among about 60 other cases, did in just this past term. Well, the reality is that even though all of those cases, those major cases, 60 of them, the subjects of oral argument and then decisions in almost all of them, finished pretty much in late June, early July, the Supreme Court justices are active in two major areas. One of them is their own individual activities. We're going to talk about those in just a moment or so. And then, interruptions in those vacation plans, if you will, for the emergency docket cases. We'll talk about what they've got in front of them and what they may yet resolve in the coming weeks. We'll talk about one of those cases on the emergency docket. That is this case coming out of Arizona and new voter registration. So let's begin. Let's begin by talking about what the Supreme Court members, or at least some of them, have been doing in this summer term. Chief Justice John Roberts. Chief Justice John Roberts headed off to Galway, Ireland in July for a teaching gig, a teaching assignment on, yes, that's right, Supreme Court history. It's a part of a New England Law in Boston program that's hosted by the University of Galway. So the Chief Justice in Ireland last month for that particular academic presentation. Justice Neil Gorsuch, Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch, traveled to Porto, Portugal in mid-July. And there he was teaching, also providing some academic instruction in a two-week seminar on the separation of powers, an interesting topic for him, for any Supreme Court justice to talk about, that taking place as a part of the George Mason University's Antonin Scalia Law School program. And when Justice Gorsuch returned, he launched a whirlwind schedule of press interviews, as you may know, for his latest book. It's called Overruled, The Human Toll of Too Much Law. Justice Gorsuch, very busy, as is Justice Jackson, Ketanji Brown Jackson, also putting the finishing touches on her own book, a memoir titled Lovely One, to be published on September 3rd. All of that happening this past summer. When we return here on Amicus, more about what the Supreme Court's been doing in its emergency docket here on Amicus, a law review.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
My friends swim no matter the season, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. Now, thanks to Skyrizi and clear skin, count me in. With Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. I am your host for this hour and also next hour here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media as we talk, as we always do in our weekend-venued discussion of law and justice and the rule of law, the administration of justice in America. And that, of course, also includes our United States Supreme Court spending a lot of time on this broadcast talking about these major earth-shaking, cataclysmic decisions in some way coming out of the Supreme Court just this past year. Also talking now about what the Supreme Court justices are doing, not in this hiatus period because they're still active, but some of the travels around the world that some of them are engaging in. And that has also included Elena Kagan. We had spoken before about her presence at the Ninth Circuit Judicial Conference out in Sacramento, California, in late July. And at that time, you may recall well that she talked a lot about this idea of an ethics code, proposing publicly for the first time that the Chief Justice, of course, that's John Roberts, that he established a group of judges, lower court judges, district court judges, appellate court judges with reputation and respect to make decisions to enforce this so-called code of ethics that should be out there. She spoke about the fact that the particular assemblage of documents and principles and standards that the Supreme Court has put together to this point have no teeth, no enforcement. So she was recommending when she had traveled to Sacramento, California, and this judicial conference that a group of lower court judges be the ones, the arbiters, the deciding players here in making determinations about when cases should be heard by justices. And also these other issues related to income and travel, all of that coming out of Elena Kagan's trip to California just this past term. She said, our summers used to be actually summers. She said, it was one of the great things about our calendar is that it was spaced out. This is Elena Kagan speaking, so that we could have a break before we went back to the hothouse of decision-making with the new term. And just the relentless bringing of these emergency petitions, she said, make that not the case anymore. So she's talking not only about ethics, but also this wildly increasing docket, sometimes called the shadow docket, certainly the emergency application docket. And among other things, she described very interestingly returning to her hotel room in Sacramento, receiving some urgent communications from her law clerks about matters that were now populating the emergency docket, even during this post-decisional period. She said, I have four new law clerks. And the thing about new law clerks, she said, is that they always write you more than you actually want to know. Went on to say, and so my four law clerks wrote me about four separate emergencies. They're at the court right now, and some of them deserving a long memorandum, and some, she said, possibly not. And that's her point. She said some of these things, some of these reasons for coming to the court on an emergency basis, not in fact truly emergencies, and could indeed wait the regular course of conduct beginning with the October term. So while she didn't specify the specific cases that she's talking about, we know from the emergency matters that are on the docket in this sort of post-decisional period, the Supreme Court has got a number of them, and that includes something like this. The West Virginia versus Environmental Protection Agency cases, some related applications there. In those multiple actions, several states and some industry groups are asking the court, again, as a part of an emergency application right now, do it immediately, to block an EPA regulation that will limit carbon emissions in coal and gas-fired power plants beginning as soon as 2030. That's their petition to the court, even now, and asking the court to stop the implementation of this rule even in the middle of the summer here. The Biden administration filed its response on August 19th. Presumably, there may be some determination of that fairly soon. Another case, Biden versus Missouri and Alaska versus Department of Education. This is also a complicated set of filings, again, seeking an emergency review by the Supreme Court. Both the Biden administration and several states are asking the court to weigh in on the administration's SAVE plan, S-A-V-E, that's the acronym, of course, to provide this income-based student loan relief. We talked a lot about that in our previous broadcast. So asking the court, again, to step in and ensure that the plan is permitted to go ahead over the stopping of that plan by lower courts. There's another case called Department of Education versus Louisiana and Cardona versus Tennessee. Nationwide, about 26 states in these applications challenging a Biden administration regulation that interprets Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972. That, as you may recall well from our previous discussions, that's a statute that bars sex discrimination in federally funded schools and colleges. And it includes sexual orientation and gender identity. The question is whether or not that also provides protections, of course, for transgender students. Multiple federal courts have blocked the regulation of the administration. The administration sought partial stays on two of those injunctions, fairly complicated along the way. But those stays would have allowed provisions of the rule that were unchallenged and were mostly less controversial to take effect across the country. And of course, all of that incredibly important, even in connection with the Supreme Court's overall review in this coming term of transgender issues. We know that it's also got on its docket, not in an emergency application status, a review of a case involving care, medical care for transgender patients. That's on the docket. All of this coming up in connection with an emergency application right now, asking the court to make a decision right away because of this opinion, this view, this advocacy, that if they don't act immediately, bad things will happen again. Sonia Sotomayor and I suspect other members of the Supreme Court identifying now this emergency docket as being overused, perhaps by people on both sides of the political aisle. Certainly we saw a great increase in it during the Trump administration, not falling back a whole lot, if at all, during the Biden administration as these things go forward. And there is indeed, as a part of this emergency docket, a major decision, or almost a non-decision, by the Supreme Court just this past week in connection with voter registration. Again, this is not a part of its regular review of cases coming up in October, a part of what will probably be another 60 cases or so. This is one of these applications that comes up on an emergency request by parties for review by the Supreme Court. What happened? What happened just this past week coming out of the state of Arizona having to do with voter registration? The Supreme Court, at least for now, allowing Arizona to follow and to enforce some tough new voting registration requirements, basically saying that people registering to vote for the first time before the coming election have to show proof of citizenship. That's what the law has said. And the Supreme Court, in this terse, fairly unsigned order, handed a partial victory to those then who wanted that particular rule, that regulation to go into effect, supporting this 2022 Arizona law, imposing these new restrictions having to do with showing proof of citizenship on voting. Significantly, the court refused to allow Arizona to put in effect another part of that law, which could have prohibited probably about tens of thousands of voters already registered from participating in the presidential election or casting any ballots by mail unless they provided proof of citizenship. So it's a bit of a mixed result here. But the big one is you want to register for the first time, you've got to show proof of citizenship in the state of Arizona. Supreme Court refusing to overturn that just this past week as we continue with Amicus, a law review, more on the emergency docket of the Supreme Court.
From the center, WRCE.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. Israel launches a preemptive strike overnight on the militant group Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israel claiming the attack was necessary because Hezbollah
from WRCE Radio is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet Buick, A&W Restaurant, Badgerland Flooring, Clary Memorial Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Meister Log and Lumber Company, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, Bailey Paint and Decorating, Papa's Trading Post, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, Richland Electric Cooperative, Schmidt Woodland Hills, The Shoebox, Walsh's Ace, McFarland's Manufacturing, All-American Do-It Center, and Goplin Insurance.